This Fan Run podcast is brought to you by DraftKings.
Hour two kicking off in the Fan Run studios. Hour two headlines. What do you got for us, Draven?
Well, just kind of capping off what just happened, more Tennessee news. The baseball boys out at Lindsey Nelson, little fan appreciation event that just took place. Apparently started at 12:15 today, ended at 1. Chance for fans to get some pictures, sign some autographs, do all that with some of the Lindsey Nelson faithful out there. But, yeah, didn't see any pictures or anything. Did you see a crowd or anything resulting from this, John?
I didn't really see anything from it.
Okay. I think it's a little silly, in my opinion. Is it not greeting them as they're getting back? Is that not enough?
Yeah, I mean, I would think so. Although, I guess if the players probably liked it, I guess, to maybe say one more goodbye and, like, be together. I don't – what was the point of it? Like, to have kids come get autographs or something?
It's also, Thursday
at noon. Family day, maybe. Maybe it's a thing for all the families to get together. I don't know, man. I don't know. It didn't bother me. I didn't have to go to it, whatever. I'm sure somebody there enjoyed it.
I just feel like you could do it, like, on a Saturday maybe, too. Thursday morning probably didn't have a huge crowd. I don't know. Yeah. Like you said, didn't really see much result from it.
I would say that the team's getting ready to, like, break up and that some guys getting ready to go home and get ready for the next part of their life. I mean,
that's
this
true.
Summer, like, graduation was 2 months ago, or a month and a half ago. And then, get prepared for the draft and prepare for either a pro career or going pro in something else.
As the dust has settled on this team, what was the overall thoughts for you fellas after we've had a couple days to kind of digest the ending and everything?
I mean, obviously, just same things we've been saying, successful season.
Yeah. One of the best complete rosters Tennessee baseball has ever seen.
50 wins, a trip to Omaha, it's about as good as it gets. Vitello was asked in a radio interview, like, hey, how do you feel about the administration? How do you feel about what's going on at the stadium talks? Like, what's going on? You going to stay at Tennessee? And he said, well, about the stadium, it's been an ongoing conversation. And then about staying, he said, I'm Italian, and we created church for a reason. We went to the SEC tournament that said loyalty with the power T. That's important to me.
Okay. Ooh. Love that.
I mean, he did go on and talk about how Tennessee was the only school that gave him a head coaching chance. Like, even threw Missouri under the bus. Like, even my alma mater didn't give me a chance.
Hey, we're good to you, Tony.
I thought the loyalty shirt went both ways. I knew he was going to try to spin it to that if he was going to stay. But I think at the time he was also asking for loyalty from the administration, to try to build a program here. Let's make some investments. Let's be loyal to each other. He says, he's Italian. I guess that implies, hey, you got to take care of the family. We're family. Speaking of which, bought my tickets to Fast 9. Going tonight, 7 o'clock.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, rewatched the 8th one last night.
Yeah?
Totally. I missed the beginning.
Right?
I had to remember why Dom was evil.
See, that's my thing also. They're just switching back and forth.
Well, Dom had to, bro.
Yeah,
spoiler, they had kidnapped his kid. They had his kid, bro.
Did he have some cool quote about family?
Of course. And Jason Statham has to go get the kid back from him. Jason Statham did used to be a bad guy.
Oh, that was
cool. What are we doing here? This is so stupid.
Shaw was a bad guy at one point.
Which one's Shaw?
It is
Jason Statham.
Oh, okay.
But then he is back in he's in the crew now, and then he had to go up on the plane and get the kid. Really good scene, too. He puts the little headphones on the kid to block out the noise, and he's just there shooting, taking care of everything. The kids are sitting there vibing, listening to music as Jason Statham's just
like, he's not going to hear gunshots over the
headphones.
I don't know.
I mean, how much noise does noise-canceling headphones actually cancel? I guess I don't know. I don't think I've ever worn.
Like gunshots right next to you. You're going to hear a little something, right?
Maybe. Probably had a silencer or something. It was a stealth mission.
The kid was vibing. Kid didn't care. And I'm pretty sure they jump out of the plane, right? Then they take the kid and they jump out. Kid just vibing. Family. I can't wait to see what happens at 9 tonight.
When is it too much? Are they going to make 10?
Apparently 11 is what they said they were aiming for. 11. I don't know how they get off this cash cow, though. I don't know how you're just going to stop after 11.
You might as well. You have some of the
biggest. What are we talking about here? They're just going to keep making movies?
Get
up to 20? Like,
you can laugh.
Got to run out of ideas at some point.
Well, that's why they're going to cross over with Jurassic Park.
That's the next step.
They're
going
to open up a whole new universe.
God.
You got to give them credit for still going, whether you like them or not, still going pretty strong after 9 movies. Not many franchises can say that.
That's true, I guess. True. So stupid. Got chumps like you selling out the theater, going out there to watch it.
I'll
just
be honest.
Blows
whenever,
my mind.
I'll be honest. Whenever I went to book my ticket, there were only like six of their tickets seats.
Oh,
so
really?
Far.
Okay. So maybe, maybe not as popular.
No. Movies come out at 7 p.m. on Thursdays now. So they don't make you do midnight anymore. They let you do Thursday at 7.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, I would not go to a midnight premiere.
Fast 9.
You know, if I was younger, maybe, but not now. But yeah, anyways, next headline.
More NBA news. We had another head coach hired, Rick Carlisle. Didn't stay unemployed too long. Got fired for, I guess, technically resigned, I guess, was the official word from the Mavs, wasn't it? But yeah, he is hired back to the Indiana Pacers, where he started his head coaching ranks. 4-year, $29 million deal. Rick, back in the driver's seat. Good move, bad move
I
for
like
the Pacers?
That. I mean, I think for the Pacers, you needed a head coach that had experience. They said they didn't want to go the new coach route again after the disaster that last year was.
Sheesh.
They have to be kicking themselves after watching how good Nate McMillan's been down in Atlanta.
Yeah.
But, like, I will say, the things coming out of Dallas haven't been great about Carlisle. There's been a lot of talks about how Luka and him butted heads and how Rick was just kind of a jerk to everybody. So, I don't know how it's going to roll an Indiana team that's already, like, kind of on edge because of how they interacted with their coach last year. But he's got the resume. It's about the best hire they could make. He gets to go back to a place he had some pretty good teams at in the mid-2000s. We'll see.
Yeah, I guess he actually started out coaching with the Detroit Pistons.
Right.
No, yeah, and then he went to the Pacers.
Larry
like
Brown
said,
replaced him,
years.
And then there's kind of a rivalry there. He was the coach of the Pacers when the whole Malice in the Palace happened. So, I mean, he was
on
the sideline when that happened.
Yeah.
And, had hair back then. Even looked more so like Jim Carrey back then.
The resemblance there is just, isn't it crazy?
I do think he was trying to be facetious on the way out. He said, I really hope that the Mavericks hired Jason Kidd.
Yeah, what do you make of this? And a lot of the indications, a lot of reporters saying that Jason Kidd feels like a good fit, you know, in Dallas, working with Luka, two somewhat similar players.
Obviously won a championship there as a player.
2011.
Under Rick Carlisle. So I don't think Rick is being sarcastic in that regard. I do think he probably has a lot of respect for Jason Kidd. And then thinks he passes like and thinks like Luka. But, I mean, Jason Kidd, I don't know. I don't think he's a good coach. Maybe he's learned.
You remember the time he told Chris Middleton to miss a free throw when they were up three because he was worried about four-point plays?
I saw that tweet. That didn't really rank
in
my –
Is that real? There's no way that's legit.
I saw somebody talk about that today, too.
Yeah, I do remember when he purposely had a player bump him so that he could spill his drink on the court to get a free timeout.
I do remember that.
I don't think that's a necessarily a stupid play, is it? I mean,
I've seen coaches
do worse.
I mean, it's not, but it's just pretty cheap. When you Google Jason Kidd, Chris Middleton, four-point play, there is stuff coming out that he had said that. So it's not a good sign for Kidd. Maybe he's learned. Maybe he's learned, but
when did he end his stint with the Bucks? What was that? I know he coached Giannis as one of 2017. So not super long ago.
Yeah.
All right.
Any other headlines?
Yeah, we will move. Actually, stay in the NBA. Reports coming out. Discussions on Ben Simmons' future. Here we go. Starting in Philly. The meltdown as we expected. It went from oh no, we're gonna work on his jump shot. Don't worry. To we don't know about his future here in Philadelphia. As apparently. Clutch CEO agent Rich Paul in the franchise's front office will be meeting this week. And no trade request was made, but talks will continue. John, what do you make of this? Ben Simmons traded? Is that your final prediction there?
Still feel like if I'm the Sixers, I'm trying the best I can to teach him how to shoot.
Again, teach somebody how to shoot. It's not that easy, though. Like we act like, oh yeah, just get him a coach and he's gonna be good. It's like I don't think that's how that works.
I think they still need to be supportive publicly, though, because they need to try to rebuild some of the trade value and don't look like they're desperately trying to trade him because that kills your leverage.
Right.
They still might trade him, but they need to. They're saying the right things, I think. Like, I mean, I think Doc probably should have said we can't win a championship with him as our point guard.
That was tough, right after game seven.
Yeah. That's tough when your emotions are high, but they got to rebuild his trade value, so they're saying the right things. Like, hey, no, we're not trading him. We're going to work with him. We're going to get him better.
I did see the stat. I can't find it. Oh, yeah, here it is. Doc Rivers was one of the – there's three players who have made major leaps in free throw percentage, and Doc Rivers was one of them. In year three for him, he went from 60% free throw percentage to 82. So anything to make of that? Doc and improving his shot? Man, Chris Webber went from 45% in year six to 75% in year seven. Crazy.
We should have seen a better raise already in free throw percentage, right? if he had a whole year of Doc and telling him how to.
Oh, yeah, that's my whole point. It's like, what's he been doing the past two or three off seasons?
Well, I mean, that was what I was getting ready to say. Like, Doc Rivers doing it in year three isn't the same as necessarily as Ben Simmons trying to do it in year five. Like,
yeah,
should have already done that, and it is going the wrong way. Although I guess he went from 56% his first year to 61.3%. I think you can live with him if he shoots 63, 64%. I think you can live with that.
Absolutely.
You can't live with 30% like he had in the playoffs, though.
And him just even scared to shoot the ball because he don't want to go to the free throw line. That's
I think if
they
just get his confidence back up to where he can hit, like I said, 63, 64%, that's fine.
Absolutely.
If he does get traded, do you guys still see him as a primary ball handler?
Yeah.
Really?
Which he's not like that. They kind of hurt him doing that with the Sixers, but like – I still think he can be a primary ball handler if they put the shooters around him. I mean, I kind of feel like his best strength is kind of doing what Giannis does, which is going just full speed at the rim and either passing it out or trying to dunk it. Like,
yep.
I don't know. That's how I feel about Ben Simmons. Let's go to break. Let's talk sports on Fan Run Radio. Some pretty big soccer news coming out. Football, as they call it around the world. UEFA. To abolish away goals as a tiebreaker from club competitions.
Oh, nice.
No more away goals as carrying more weight. The rule had been in place since 1965. The team that had scored more goals as the away side were awarded the victory in tiebreakers, but from now on, this will be replaced by extra time and penalties.
Oh, nice. Okay, yeah, I like that.
Wait, so if it was a tie, the away team got the win? Is that what you're telling me?
No.
What are you saying?
No, like...
How much do you know about soccer? You look like a soccer guy. Are you not a soccer guy?
I know about soccer a little bit, yeah. Does it not always go to extra time in these? Is this
No, because like in club stuff, there would be like, you know, usually do like two legs. It's like in the Champions League, there'd be like a two-game series, basically, where each team got to host a game. So, like, if they were tied after two games, it would go to, like, the away goals carried more weight.
Oh, okay.
So, if it was 4-4 on the aggregate, but you scored, like, three of your goals on the road, like, and beat a team 3-1, or, like, in three, whatever, it would be 3-2 or whatever, that carried more weight. So, that was, like, if it was 4-4, you know, or tied, the away goals would be a tiebreaker. If it was tied, like, with away goals as well, then they would go to extra time or PKs. But now they're just skipping the away goal. Bonus.
I like that.
I don't know how fans are going to feel about it. Old fans, like I said, it's been in place since 1965. But I do think the casual fan might enjoy the PKs more. Like, I do think PKs are built-in drama, built-in excitement. But if you're changing anything, and like I said, in such a popular sport that is rich in tradition, if you're changing anything that's been in place since 1965, that is a pretty big deal.
For sure, yeah.
The impact of the rule now runs counter to its original purpose, as it in fact now dissuades home teams, especially in first legs, from attacking because they fear conceding a goal that would give their opponents a crucial advantage. So what they're saying is in these two-game series, the home team plays scared. And I'd rather have a 0-0 tie.
Than take your chances.
Than take your chances of, giving up a away goal because that counts double. I don't know if that's true or not, but that's what they're saying.
Makes sense, though. I mean, especially if it's like a close level of competition and you would think, okay, we can get a goal from them on the road.
Like, my line of thinking, Cam, was just that, like, home field advantage matters less in every sport than it used to.
Yeah, that too.
Like, everyone's kind of built into being able to play on the road, but also, like, it's easier to travel than it was in 1965.
Right.
Yep.
Like, it did seem pretty silly. I don't know if it's, like, pandemic-related, but it did feel pretty silly. Like, oh, wow, you scored a goal on the road against, you know, 10% capacity. That's going to make such a – like, you get such an advantage for doing that. Like, that seems kind of dumb.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So maybe that being there kind of let, you know, people open their eyes and say, oh, this does seem kind of strange.
How much does home field even really, like outside of the obviously the travel and stuff, how much does it really affect soccer? Because every time I've been to like soccer stuff, people are cheering the whole game like regardless, you know, their chants and all that kind of stuff. So I feel like that's almost similar away or at home. Because they're not going to be like, you're not getting a home crowd that's like silent when their team's on offense.
Right.
You know, kind of the same.
Yeah, you know, it's just like you know the team's behind you. But like you said, yeah, it's not like quiet on offense, loud on defense. Yeah. Or, you know, you can, there's not really any situations like in basketball where you're heckling a player at the free throw line or you know, make booing when they touch the ball. It's a little bit, it's not the same type of thing. So that's a fair question. I'm not sophisticated enough as a soccer fan to know the answer to that. But like I do know, again, that this is a pretty big deal.
Yeah, for sure.
And this is just for the club. This is just for the club tiebreakers. I don't know what the UEFA what's going on the Euros. I don't know what the tiebreakers there were or not. But international is still going to have. I don't know if they do away goals or not. I mean, I don't know.
I can't remember what the tiebreaker was.
Because I know theoretically, like in the World Cup, there are no like home teams.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
In the Euros, there were. I don't know if they.
I think it's goal differential is usually the main one.
Right.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know, like if it's tied after that, what goes? I guess goal scored probably.
Maybe
that way. Had a little bit of drama there yesterday, in the Euros as they were trying to get the last group decided. You had France and Portugal have three PKs as Germany was scrambling with Hungary.
That was the group of death, wasn't it? All those teams.
Yep. And it came down to the very end. Yeah.
It was a good day of games. It was a fun day of games. Like we kind of talked about how that like Poland Sweden one was fun to start the day.
Sure.
And then Portugal France obviously ended in a tie. And then Germany Hungary as well.
It's a knockout set starting on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
So where everybody's advanced out of the group stage. We're done with the group stage.
Group stage is over. There's a 3-day break, and like I said on Saturday, you'll get Wales and Denmark and Italy and Austria kicking it off. I don't know if anybody really cares about that game, but the next, I will say, Sunday's games feel pretty good. As the Netherlands, my favorite team to watch so far in the tournament, plays the Czech Republic. And then my second favorite team to watch in the tournament, Belgium, plays Portugal. So I'll care a lot about Sunday's action because I like the Netherlands and I like Belgium.
There's any big teams that are left off, didn't make it through the next stage?
None that I really saw. Like all the favorites made it through.
Okay. So very expected so far.
Yeah. There's, you know, England tying with Scotland was a headline. They got booed, but England ended up advancing through. So, I mean, it wasn't like they cost themselves.
Germany first, if I remember correctly.
Say that again? They played Germany first? Yep. Germany, England played Tuesday. Yep. So that'd be fun while we're on here doing the show.
Yep.
Spain and Croatia should be a good one. France, Switzerland. So, yeah, none. No, like, I guess England-Germany would probably be the biggest matchup, I guess.
Yeah, I think so.
England hasn't won anything in a long time.
And they were one of the like favorites up there, too, to win this. So.
And Germany's not supposed to be as good as they usually are. So I'm pretty into the Euros right now.
Same.
Going to get pretty low on sports, so I guess this is about all we got.
Well, my team's still playing basketball right now. The basketball playoffs are still going on. Yeah, I don't know if you know this, but the Hawks are 3 wins away from going to the NBA Finals.
Oh, really? I had no idea.
Stuff going on over here as well. Baseball.
The Tampa Bay Rays are playing what game? Like what, 50, 60? What game are we at
game
right now?
60, but we got the top guy.
Game 70. What game? What game are they at right now? Like 75
it's
games.
About, so 43 plus 30. Yeah, so it's about the 60 number.
43 plus 30.
Oh my god!
It's not.
You are so right.
It's
man.
Not the 60
you
game.
You are
number.
So right. Yeah, it's like closer to 75-80 range.
Okay, so they're getting close to the halfway point.
All-Star game, 90 games.
Okay, so the All-Star game is like, what, in the middle of July still?
Mm-hmm.
Summer Classic, and then boom, we'll wait 2 more weeks, and then it'll be baseball season. Like right there when like NFL preseason starts, I'll start checking the baseball standings. All right, there we go.
Wow. Baseball's so stupid. Speaking of your Rays, the whole was it sticky stuff? The whole thing going on—it's getting ridiculous, man. They're having your
not just mob.
I don't even—I get it. No. I'm just saying. I was seeing that game and I saw where the pitcher had a little tiny stain on his hat, and they had to literally go and get a whole new hat. Like, what are we doing? It was a tiny. It showed a tiny little stain on there, and they thought he was using some sticky stuff, so they had him completely change out his hat. Like, what are we doing? That's what we need in baseball: more pauses, more stops in a game that lasts 4 hours. Ridiculous.
It does
man.
Seem to run counterintuitive to the idea of we're going to put a pitch clock in and try to fix the pace
of
play. That now we're stopping and checking pitchers every, you know, every other inning to see if they're doing anything illegal.
Is it the other team that requests
team
it? Is that how it goes?
To the pitcher. Okay. If they see something, they see him play with his belt buckle. But at this point, you're exactly right. It's getting way too much. They're complaining about everything just because they know they can. Yeah. I would might be able to wiggle their way out of something.
I would simply keep adjusting if I wasn't cheating, just to constantly get checked. That way I could prove, like, hey, I'm not cheating. Mm-hmm. Got a couple teams streaking right now in baseball, though. The Padres finish off the sweep of the Dodgers. They're now only a half game back, although neither the Dodgers nor the Padres are in first place. That would be the Giants.
Wow.
But again, the Padres have won 7 in a row. They're kind of overcoming some of their early season obstacles. You got the Nationals, winners of 9 of their last 10, 4 in a row. They've pulled into second place.
Thank God Hayden's not here.
They're still under 500, so they're still not very good, but they're trying to catch the Mets, who have pitchers dropping like flies. You got the Villains. Houston Astros winning 10 games in a row as they are now 2 games up in the AL West.
They're still so good.
And then, I mean, they're still good. They were kind of struggling at one point, and they, again, won 10 in a row. And then, I guess, the AL East, you do have a pretty good race between the Red Sox and the Rays. Then, again, I am, what'd I say, two months away from caring about? Check back in around August 24th. We'll check back in on, like, baseball season and see where the races are going down. We'll watch the last, like, month together.
And you know the home run derby's fun.
Is it?
Yes.
I mean, I like.
Really? Y'all don't like the home run derby?
I mean, when you see a home run, you've seen them all. I mean,
okay. It's just a ball go far. When I see a pitcher compete in the home run derby next month, I am going to be ecstatic because that's absolutely crazy.
Now that is something. Like Ohtani's been awesome. Like he's been really, really good. The Angels might have the best and second best player in baseball. Maybe.
They can't get over 500.
And they are 10 games back of the Astros and in fourth place in their division. Again, I know Trout's out, but like maybe the two best players in baseball, two of the most exciting players in baseball, at least, two quote-unquote generational guys. You got maybe the best player ever, you know, statistically with Mike Trout and his advanced metrics. And then you got Shohei Ohtani doing his best Babe Ruth impression, and they are 10 games under five or 10 games back of the Astros and 2 games under 500.
It shows you don't need to spend money to win.
Yeah, shows something. Shows something. Maybe give that spend the money on a pitcher instead of whatever that guy's name was from Rendon from the Nationals. Oh. It's in like a lighting money on fire. We'll check in baseball. Like I said, a couple more weeks. We'll update you on what's happening there. We'll talk some Vols in the draft combine coming up with Derek Murray. Does some scouting work, worked for the Thunder at one point. We'll talk with him, see what he thinks about Keon and Pons and Chandler on the G3 Help Me Hotline. Stick with us as Talk Sports on Fan Run Radio. Mama told me not to, I did anyway, miss me. All right, let's talk some Vols in the combine as we go to the G3 Help Me Hotlines. Let's talk with Derek Murray. Derek's an NBA draft writer. Derek, what's up, man?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Appreciate y'all having me on.
Well, we had to after the way the Vols kind of showed out yesterday. I know you kind of like Tennessee yourself, so you're always my go-to guy when it comes to Tennessee in the NBA projections. A lot of Tennessee news. Keon Johnson, I will start with him, breaks the NBA draft combine all-time record with a max vertical jump of 48 inches. What was kind of the buzz coming out of that performance for him?
I mean, it was one of those things where everybody knew he was an elite athlete. Like, the athleticism is what's kept him high on draft boards for a while now, but to really see that number written down, you know, there are some discussions, you know, some people don't necessarily believe the standing reach numbers and, you know, some players try to get tricky with that. But let's say even in a hypothetical world, he fudged it a little on his reach and it's 46 or 47. Like, that still breaks the record. So that's what does it for me, is he broke it by enough to where I don't really have many questions. We've all seen the videos of the dunks this season where he just puts people on posters. So to kind of see him continuing to work out, get stronger and even more athletic than we saw during the year, that was really, really impressive.
Is there much room for him to move up out of that, like, number 7 or number 8 spot? Like, did he make himself some money yesterday, or did he just kind of solidify himself as a top 10 guy?
I think he solidified himself as a top guy more than necessarily moving up. Depending on who you ask, you know, some guys like him in that top 10, some guys like him in the back end of the lottery, that top 14. Just because there are some questions, you know, offense, how can he create for himself? Can he shoot the 3 ball reliably? But again, the athleticism being there is no question, so I still like him as a projected lottery pick for sure.
Yeah, when I look at the teams kind of picking in that 6 to 10 range, like, I think it makes sense for Oklahoma City if they stay at 6, where they're just kind of trying to buy athleticism and trying to find a star and maybe see him mold. Like, Golden State, I don't think he'd make a lot of sense there for a team that's trying to win. Orlando, again, maybe you're trying to buy a star. Maybe they could, would make sense for him. And then number 9 in Sacramento, like, that's where he's projected by CBS Sports right now. I just don't want him to end up there because, you know, no one succeeds there, really, except Tyrese Halliburton and Fox. Like, everyone else has been a failure there for the last 15 years. Is there a fit in that 6 to 10 range, you think, that makes the most sense for him?
You know, I think the Thunder at 6, if they want to bet on athleticism, which they've been known to do in the past, that can make sense. That's why, you know, Scotty Barnes and James Bouknight have also been mocked there a couple times. So I think he's in the discussion at that point. I think New Orleans at 10 can make a little sense with them drafting Kyra Lewis last year to run the pure point guard. You know, Johnson could be a really nice mix of athleticism at the 2. You know, Lewis's speed is unreal. So if you had elite speed and then elite athleticism, one primary an offensive guy, one primary defensive guy, you know, at 10, it could make some sense there and just pair those two together.
As someone who loves the NBA and loves the basketball Vols, I need a star. I need somebody that can go to the NBA and contribute. Like, I had high hopes for Grant Williams and Admiral, and, you know, obviously Admiral having a hard time getting a real shot in the league and sticking, and Grant kind of up and down, you know, seems like an eighth guy in the rotation at best, NBA career. So I'm hoping that Keon can get there and make some noise. If not him, though, Jaden Springer, projected also to be a first-round pick. I see where you post he had, you know, a 41.5 max vertical, tied for 6, you know, as to a 6'3 frame with a pretty good wingspan at 6'7¾". What kind of prospect do you see Springer as right now?
So Springer's probably one of the safest guys in this whole class. I don't know if the upside long-term, you know, if he has the highest ceiling. But again, a bully guard who's still extremely young, efficient all over the floor, 81% from the line, 43% from 3, and is a terrific on-ball and team defender. You know, with his wingspan and his athleticism now, there's not a whole lot I'm going to worry about. You know, he does all the little things right. He's a really tough kid. So I think he's comfortably probably a top 20 player. You know, some people see him slide to the end of the first. I would bet against that. Again, I think he's got a real chance to stick in the league for a very, very long time.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind him falling to my Hawks at 20. Or I guess that wouldn't even be really considered falling because he's kind of projected at the end of the first round. But I wouldn't mind the Hawks taking him kind of as Trey's backup. You know, that's been a spot they need to solidify. So, you know, Springer learning there, learning in Phoenix behind Chris Paul. Something of that. Mm-hmm. I do think he is a guy with a high IQ that can get to his spots and have a shot in the league as well.
Right. And I think in our current mock right now, in our update, we actually have him to Atlanta at 20.
Okay.
You know, him playing defense next to Trae Young makes a ton of sense. They've drafted really well the last couple of years and have kind of your 6, 7, 8, 9, like, wing defenders. So adding a guy who can be versatile at the guard position, and Springer played point guard at IMG in high school. So in spurts, when he does have to handle the ball, he is capable. So again, the Hawks at 20, I think, is a great fit.
basketballnews.com if you want to go check out that mock draft right now. Talking with Derek Murray on the G3 Help Me Hotlines. Let's talk a little Pons. Pons, you know, measured in at 6'6". I think that might have surprised some Tennessee fans because of how big he plays. But I've seen a lot of positive buzz for his athleticism, which we know about, and also that his shooting kind of catching some people's attention. Is Pons making himself some money?
I think he's making a little bit of money. I still think he's a fringe draftable guy. You know, if someone takes him at the end of the second, it does make sense. And I think there's a defensive role for him just because he's so athletic and he is an innate shot blocker. You know, talking to Tennessee fans, I don't have to tell you guys that. Like, he just has a knack for protecting the rim, which I think translates at his size with his length and bounce. There are some concerns with how he's going to score at the NBA level. You know, a lot of his shots are those turnaround 8 to 12 foot kind of fadeaway jumpers. Not only do I not know if you can get those in the league, or is a lot of teams going to let you take those in the league? So I think he's going to have to improve as an offensive player before he really gets a legitimate NBA shot. But I think going straight to the G League could be beneficial, or he's got a passport, so go overseas and make a ton of money in an international league over in Europe somewhere. So I think he's going to have a lot of options as far as what he's going to be able to do after the draft.
But you don't see him as a for sure second round draft pick with a guy that's going to get a realistic chance. You think he could still end up back overseas playing professional basketball? Okay.
I do. But if someone takes him in the 50s, you know, it's clear of like, okay, you know exactly what you're getting with him, and I totally understand the pick. I think in today's NBA, you're going to see a lot of teams bank on kind of the shooting specialist at that point in the draft and not necessarily the defensive specialist.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel like if he is going to make it, it's going to have to kind of be as a, you know, just a small ball five. But, you know,
right.
I don't know if that's somebody at his size at 6'6". I know he can protect the rim in college, but got to prove he can do it in the NBA. Maybe that's the G League, as you said. Have you gotten a chance to look ahead at all next year for some of the Vols coming in? You know, Candy Chandler, how he projects at the next level. We've been talking about him today. You know, maybe the most exciting prospect Tennessee's had, you know, maybe ever. Have you gotten a chance to scout him at all?
Yeah, so our lead draft analyst at Basketball News, Matt Babcock, he was down at the Geico Nationals and was super impressed with Chandler. I mean, that kid is lightning quick. You know, he's got limited size. He's probably 6 foot. You know, he's really not that big. But, again, he's highly intelligent, has a full, you know, ball-handling arsenal, can get to the rim, and loves to push the pace in transition. I think early on you're kind of looking at him, you know, way too far in advance, could scratch into the lottery. Kind of going into next year, I think a lot of sites have him in that 10 to 15 range, at least early. He is going to be really, really exciting. And the way I think it works out great for Tennessee is that he and Viscovi are so different that I think it's like a great 1-2 punch, almost like you would want in like a football backfield. You know, they're going to play so different that I think off of each other, they could be really difficult to stop from an opposing defense perspective.
Yeah, I think what you've said about Chandler, you know, I've seen the same thing. Like you said, it's kind of a 10 to 15 range. I do get more excited about his college prospects next year than either Springer or Keon because, you know, we talked about Keon Johnson. A lot of his was athleticism, not so much raw not so much basketball talent or IQ. It's just kind of like, look at this guy, watch him jump off the, mm-hmm. off the, you know, out of the gym. Whereas Chandler, I think, from what I've watched, has more of a basketball IQ and point guard feel already. So I've been pretty excited about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's going to be way more of a threat as far as pulling up off the dribble and, you know, getting to the rim and finishing both in the half court and transition. So I think we'll see more points from him than we saw from either of these guys.
Looking at the rest of the NBA draft, I mean, Cade Cunningham, number one to Detroit. Is that a slam dunk?
I think it's, if I'm willing to bet, that's what I would project to happen. There are going to be discussions, I believe, at least on Evan Mobley, because he looks like a generational talent. I mean, his legitimate 7 foot, runs like a deer, great movement skills, extremely mobile, and one of the best defenders we've seen in a very long time. So I would at least have that discussion internally. I do think the Pistons will end up with Cade at number one. And then, you know, 2 through 5, it gets a little, I won't say shaky, but those guys can go in any order. You know, there are different people at different teams who some love Mobley, some love Jalen Green, some are in love with Suggs. Just kind of depends on a lot of team fit at that 2 through 4 and 2 through 5 range. But, yeah, Cade should be going one.
Yeah, it does seem like the NBA has to feel pretty good about their G League Elite team, right, with Jalen Green and Kuminga both being, you know, top 5 picks after going that route.
Yeah, I mean, even in a COVID year, I think the team did really, really well. You could tell the youth in the guys and that it had been a while since they played basketball early in the G League bubble. But as, you know, as the season went on, I think in the second half of the G League season specifically, those two looked really good. Jalen Green really came into his own as a scorer. And, you know, we were able to talk to Kuminga when we did a workout with him down in Orlando. And he had nothing but, you know, great things to say about how the G League ran it, how the NBA ran it, taking care of the players or families and making it well worth their while. So I think it's going to be a success for a long time.
I think the most intriguing team in the top 10, really in the entire draft, are the Golden State Warriors as they're getting Klay Thompson back. They're trying to win a championship. If you're Golden State, are you trying to draft just the most NBA-ready guy now? Or are you trying to go with another project like James Wiseman? Are you trading the pick? What do you think Golden State should do at 7?
So when we do these mock drafts, you know, this is a conversation Matt and I kind of go back and forth on each time. You know, at 7 right now, we're comfortable with James Bouknight there. I think he, you know, long-term could be a 20 points per game kind of guy in the NBA. Great scorer, athleticism, good size, crafty around the rim, pull-up shooting. Like, he's got the whole package. I think their pick at 14 is where it gets really interesting because you're going to be able to have some mobile bigs if they're on the board that you can kind of pair as a stretch four, rim protector, you know, with or without Wiseman on the floor, guys like Kai Jones and Isaiah Jackson. Right now, we've mocked Corey Kispert there because I think adding another shooter to that team. And imagine Steph with the ball, and then you have Klay Thompson and Corey Kispert both running off the ball. I mean, that is just an insane amount of offensive firepower. So, you know, if I'm there at 14 and Kispert's on the board, or even a guy could be a stretch, a guy like Chris Duarte from Oregon, again, a mature, tenured college player who could come in and play right away, I think that's what they'll look at if they can't get one of those young bigs.
talking with Derek Murray as I let you out. Give me one prediction you want to put on record, either something you think happens on draft night or one prospect that you feel really, really good about that you want to stake your claim to.
I think at least a guy right now, you know, you got to watch out for JT Thor from Auburn. Kind of a late bloomer, if you will, still very young, 18 years old, but he's 6'10", 205, big smooth lefty. I'm sure Tennessee fans are at least somewhat familiar with him from those matchups, but and he's really raw, but he's a guy to watch. I his physical tools are really, really something special, and I think if it clicks for him, you know, there's a lot of ifs for that to happen, but if it clicks for JT Thor, I think you've got a really, really good player on your hands. So even if he doesn't pan out for a couple years, I'm curious to see if someone takes a shot on him in the back end of that first round.
Derek, appreciate you joining us. You can keep up with his draft coverage on Twitter, DMurrayNBA, and read his stuff, basketballnews.com. Hopefully we catch up to you closer to draft time.
Hey, yes, sir. Thank you so much for having me on, guys.
Yes, sir. Appreciate it. Derek joined us on the G3 Help Me Hotlines. If you or a loved one has been injured in an accident, give them a call at 865-558-8030 or visit online at g3helpme.com. They've been serving all of East Tennessee with over 20 years of experience. Let the G3 team get you the money you deserve. That's g3helpme.com. You can go to hell, my dear. Appreciate Derek for joining us. Did you guys learn anything?
Yeah, I love stuff about scouting, projections, and things like that. I'm a big behind the scenes guy. I love learning about that kind of stuff.
I was just talking this morning that with people that I don't know how to project when it comes to this on the draft. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
Yeah, he's obviously on it, and I think a lot of time it's with the NBA, it's that kind of mix between potential and you know what you think you can get right away and. You got to try the – usually when you find a good prospect, it's a happy medium, obviously. And that's, you know, we kind of talk about, like, Keon. Like, he's definitely leaning way more on the potential side of it than the day one stuff. And so that's why I – you know, like, he has such a wide almost, like, range of projection because it kind of just depends on what the team and how comfortable they feel, like, with that projection. Stuff like that.
What's surprised to see on their mock draft, Keon all the way down at 15? A little low, maybe.
He's
been like top 10 in most mock drafts.
People don't believe in the potential enough or don't want to wait on the potential. He may slide to a team that's, you know, more willing to jump on that. That's just kind of how that stuff kind of goes. It's weird. Like, you kind of talk about how Springer's one of the safer prospects in the draft. I mean, that's super accurate because obviously you saw his production. You saw what he can do. He's got a little bit of everything you want from a guy, but you feel like you could put out there on the court and play right away. But also at the same time, he doesn't have as high of a potential as Keon.
Yeah, I felt that way about Springer for a lot of the year. I mean, just kind of where he is.
And
going to be somebody you can put in, and he'll probably be a guy that can be a 8 or 9 year NBA backup at least.
Yeah. Jalen Brunson-esque.
I don't know if even I don't know. I don't know if that's who I'd compare him to. I saw Evan Turner as like the best case like college scenario, just where he's kind of in control. He's maybe not as tall. Maybe even. A Miller. I'm drawing a blank on his first
name.
Andre Miller. Thank you. I was going to say Anthony. I was just sorry. An Andre Miller type that just kind of you get in the post and kind of post guys up and create out there and just plays under control and slow. I mean, I don't know how much he's going to be blowing by people at the level, but I do think so. Getting him somewhere like Phoenix to learn behind Chris Paul would be ideal.
Yeah, that'd be big for him for sure.
You said you'd like him with the Hawks?
I'd like him with the Hawks. I mean, I think, you know, he would be a pretty steady backup. I do think he'll be a rookie that can come in and play earlier. And I don't think he can be a starter anywhere early. But I think he can come in and be a guy that gives you 18 minutes or so off the bench.
So like Pritchard. Kind of like Pritchard's role for the Celtics.
Yeah, Pritchard without the shooting. But like, like Pritchard's role. But yeah, not bring you the same type of shooting. But I realize I don't know what the hell I'm talking about when it comes to the draft. I don't know.
There's just so many prospects. Like, it's just, I don't know. It is hard to separate these guys, I feel like.
No, it's hard. If it was easy, you know, people wouldn't be missing prospects and stuff.
Found a tweet of mine on draft night from whenever we drafted Trey where I'd said that Luka was my number one, which I stand by. I wanted Luka badly. But then my number two was Mo Bamba. And I was like, oh, God. Oh, Mo Bamba. And then,
is he still with the Magic?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then if not them, Kevin Porter Jr., which I guess to my credit, he did score 50 points
He's been good scoring.
Yeah, I just realized, you know, I'm not good at projecting. I do remember getting an argument when the show first started about Jason Tatum, where I was like, I don't see it. I don't think Jason Tatum's going to be that good. I had a whole argument about it. I was like, well, do you think he'll ever be better than Jimmy Butler is right now? Which I don't know if Tatum's hit that yet, but yeah.
He's better than Jimmy Butler.
Well, I don't know if he was when Jimmy Butler at the time.
Okay.
Like 3 years
ago. Right now, as we said, we could all agree Tatum's better.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, I don't think that'd be a consensus by any means. Jimmy Butler did beat him out for all NBA. But, I mean, they're basically neck and neck. So, like, the comparison, the argument I was having, you know, they were right by saying he would be as good as that. I don't know who I'd take now between Butler and Tatum, but either way.
I think that's an argument. Butler can't even make a jump shot anymore. He can't make a three anymore.
Yeah, but he was, I mean, that far removed from carrying his team to the finals. I don't think we should throw him away just because he had a bad series. Tatum's great, though. I mean, I'm going to Markelle Fultz, which, again, who knows, maybe if he didn't have a nerve damage, he could have been that guy. That's how the Sixers probably feel.
That's what they're saying.
No, it wasn't a bad pick. Yeah, we could have had Jason Tatum, and that would have been a perfect guy to pair. And I will say the Sixers, like, they did fumble the process. We're talking about Ben Simmons. Like, it did never make sense for me that they would draft Markelle Fultz to play next to Ben Simmons. That never made sense. Because Ben Simmons was, like, kind of their point guard at the time. Like, that never made sense. Like, the same as them drafting, like, Jahlil Okafor and Nerlens Noel back-to-back. And Embiid,
that's three. Say, all three of
had
them,
three centers. Now, you know, they struck with Embiid, obviously, but like they just never. They were drafting just kind of on like auto draft. It felt like. I mean, man, imagine how different that Sixers team would look if they had Jason Tatum instead of Markelle Fultz. Imagine like that perimeter defense with Ben Simmons and Jason Tatum.
Yeah,
you wouldn't care about Ben Simmons if you had Tatum there as your closer. Yeah. Could have been much differently. The process. The process should have worked.
Yep.
And if I'm Sam Hinkie, I'm like, hey, you guys fired me before I could make it work. You know, the NBA got rid of me, and we let the Colangelo boys come and run into the ground. But, like, if they had gotten Jason Tatum, if they had just made the right pick, all his assets could have paid off. There was a chance to have three superstars, or two superstars, or one superstar, and two really, really good players, however you want to phrase it. But, you know, Tatum, Simmons, and Embiid looks a lot better than Embiid. Simmons and Tobias.
You could also do this with every team in the NBA, though, right? I mean, a pick that they missed at some point or another.
Mm-hmm. Maybe. But, like, it does get worse in this scenario because, like, the Sixers traded up from three to get to one to draft Fultz.
Yeah.
Like, and gave up an extra first-round pick to do that. Like, so you can do it. Like, yeah, look, if they just would have drafted so-and-so here. Yeah, of course. But, like, it is a little different when you trade up to draft a guy.
Trade up to miss, yeah.
Yeah, you trade up and miss. And the team you traded with got the best player there by far. But, yeah. Every franchise could look and say, oh, if we had just gotten this guy instead. Trust me, I've done it a million times with the Titans, drafting Jake Locker instead of J.J. Watt. If only we just drafted J.J. Watt.
Vic Beasley instead of T.J. Watt.
Yeah. Oof.
Or Tack. It was one of those two. I can't remember.
Neither
I think
one.
It was Tack, but oof. Yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, I wanted T.J. Watt, too.
That's unfortunate, Cam.
They need to just hire me and let me make the decisions.
You know, they are trying to cut costs down there in Atlanta, I hear, so you can maybe
you
go.
Yeah,
come hire me.
There
hire
you go.
Then you can trade back for Julio.
I would. Sell a farm.
Hour two in the books. We'll kick off hour three with headlines. Stick with us. Talk sports on Fan Run Radio.